Welcome to CBT News with Jim Fitzpatrick.
Good morning, everyone. Jim Fitzpatrick with CBT News. Kind of a special edition with CBT News. We have Mr. Bernie Marino here. I know that you know this gentleman from the retail automotive industry. He's all over the place. And guess what? He's running to be the senator, the next senator of the great state of Ohio. Bernie, thank you so much for joining us on today's show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it very much. It's always great to talk to you.
Sure. So congrats on the big news. You just came out with an incredible PR release that said you guys not only raised the most money recently, but you crushed the other guys and without any PAC money or without any money from your own account. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, exactly. So this is obviously first time I've ever run for public office, you know, motivated by what's going on in our country. This hard push to the left. We're seeing countries like Cuba rebelling against it. We can't let that come to the U.S. And so I announced my campaign April 6th. And our first fundraising quarter, I beat our nearest Republican opponent by 50%. Wow. There's five of us running in the race on the Republican side and only one running on the Democratic side. And I outraised him by $150,000. And he's part of the Clinton machine. So far, we're off to a great start. We've had a lot of car dealer support, which I appreciate very, very much.
Right. And we're going to talk to you about some of the issues that are facing car dealers and the importance of them having a voice in D.C., of course, outside of some of the congressmen that we have that are also automobile dealers. And of course, the NADA, which is right there in D.C. But there's currently no senators, U.S. senators that are currently or have been automobile dealers, correct?
That's correct. 85 lawyers, though. So lawyers are very
lawyers. That's what we need more of. Yeah, that's what we need more of. More lawyers, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, let me ask you this. You recently met with President Trump, or I'd say former President Trump, in Ohio when he visited the state. And talk to us about the importance of getting his blessing or his support to become a candidate, a serious candidate on the Republican ticket, you know, from Ohio.
Yeah, so President Trump is very, very popular in Ohio. He enjoys something like almost 90% popularity. He won the state by 8.5 points. So obviously his endorsement would be a big deal. My point of view when I met with him was that I thought he shouldn't endorse anybody at this point, because what we have to do is we have to do the hard work. We have to go out and travel the states, a big state. It's the seventh largest state in the country. Over 11 million people live in Ohio. Five media markets. So let us do the hard work. Let us go out and connect with voters. Let us raise money. And I think he agreed. And for now, he's staying out of the endorsement. But obviously, at some point, I hope to be able to get his endorsement.
Right. Let's talk about immigration, because I know that's something that's near and dear to your heart because of your background and your upbringing and what have you. And so having said that, what should the country do with regard to immigration? There's obviously, it's a very divisive issue today. Do we build the wall? Do we not build the wall? Do we let people in that are, you know, seeking political asylum? What do we do with the 12 million that are here illegally? And I know I just threw a whole loaded question there, but give us kind of your viewpoint on immigration with regard to the U.S.
Sure. Well, let me start by saying that without immigration, I wouldn't be here. And without immigration, I don't think America would be the great country that it is. So that's very important. But you have, I bifurcated into two conversations. One is about illegal immigration, and we have to do everything in our power to combat illegal immigration. We have to finish the wall because it does work. We have to put in place what President Trump had done, which is the stay in Mexico policy, seeking asylum in your home country. We had Mexican troops helping protect the border, because not only does that help combat illegal immigration, but also drug trafficking. So a hard stance on illegal immigration, red line, cannot cross. Then we shift over and say, okay, how about legal immigration? And we have probably closer to 30 million people here illegally. And what we have to do is there's 30 million stories inside that. And we have to be the compassionate country that we are. And we have to understand that we have to have very specific policies around how to deal with that. Some of that could be a path to legal status. Some of it could be having to be deportation, depending on whether it was criminal activity, et cetera. But we have to have a compassionate view on that. And then overriding all this is a reform of our legal immigration system to say, We have to have immigration policies that benefit America, and we have to be able to dial it up and down depending on our needs. When unemployment is very low, we can dial that up and bring more immigrants than we do right now. By the way, it's 1 million. We allow 1 million legal immigrants into this country every single year and grant them permanent status. So that's a big number. Obviously, the problem is that tens of millions more want to come to the U.S. But I think those are the two ways to solve that problem.
Sure. And so let's switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the issues that dealers face that they need help on in Washington. Currently, the Biden administration, under their infrastructure bill, wants to put 500,000 charging stations across the U.S. to support an electrification, of the vehicles that we're going to be seeing, from all of these manufacturers. You're a car guy, and every manufacturer out there has now jumped into the EV business in a very big way. So many states have announced bills that say you can't sell a combustion engine after 2030 or 2035. It looks as though in the next 15, 20, 25 years, all dealers are going to be selling, full line of EVs. So the importance of having the infrastructure in place is there. What is your take on that? Should the government be doing that?
I'm not a big believer that electrification is the right answer. First of all, a couple things. Number one, 73% of all lithium battery production lives in China. So for us to become dependent on China for batteries seems like a very, very bad decision. Now, we could move battery production to the U.S., but when you look at the climate impact of battery manufacturing versus having better internal combustion engines, I think it's a wash, and I don't know that we need to be moving in that direction. And by the way, the marketplace has spoken. Electric vehicles are less than 2% of total sales, and yet some of these left-wing governors want to make all cars electric vehicles in a not-so-distant future. So I think we have to examine that in a close way and not just jump in head first into electrification. I think that's a mistake from a public policy perspective. I think we should let the markets figure that out. And right now, the markets have said no. If you take Tesla out of the equation, it's an even smaller number of electric vehicles out there. I know when I had car dealerships, had lots of Nissan dealerships. We couldn't give away those electric cars. They sat in the lots. Porsche dealers are sitting on Porsche Taycans like crazy, but selling 911s like crazy. So I think we have to let the markets decide. I think the government's pushing something just for virtue signaling and not really about solving a problem. And again, we don't want to be more dependent on China for anything.
Right. So you had mentioned Tesla, so let's kind of go there for a second. Obviously, dealers are concerned that Tesla is able to sell their products directly to consumers and bypass the state franchise laws. And I know that obviously these are state laws and not a federal law per se, but what can be done to protect dealers on a federal level to make sure that we don't have more companies like Rivian and Tesla and Lucid come in to our industry and say, well, forget the dealers. We're going to deal directly with consumers. And dealers see that as a very unlevel playing field.
It absolutely is. And one of the things that we have to understand and be better at in the retail automotive business is being better communicators of the issue. Think about what happened when Amazon destroyed all these small little businesses, small little boutiques, small little shops that lived in all kinds of communities all over the country. Then take what would happen if car dealerships had suffered that same fate. Your local car dealer is your biggest supporter of local charities, local sports, local giving, local employment, right? So if we shift that all out to one centralized company like what Vroom or Carvana envision, that would be devastating for these local communities in an exponentially bigger way than what happened with Amazon. So we have to talk about that. We have to talk about what car dealers do for their local community. And I know it's an enormous amount. I think I would venture to guess that as a group, we're the most generous group to local communities of any other industry, period. That's number one. Number two is we have to take away from a federal level all the back doors. So one of the things that manufacturers are talking about is saying, hey, when we have autonomous vehicles, that doesn't really count as a part of the franchise agreement. We have to close all these little back doors that they're hoping to open. You know, here in Ohio, there's a company called Lordstown Motors that wants to sell only to fleets. We won't sell to consumers, so we don't have to be subject to those laws. We can take a stand on a federal level, say, no, these things are not loopholes that can be exploited.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Let's talk about something that is for every dealer is a major concern. In fact, we see a lot of buy-sell activity right now because of this, and that is taxes. It looks as though if Biden had it his way, there would be a tremendous capital gains tax and other taxes, I'm sure, that could come up, and dealers are making the decision to sell their dealerships now before something like that hits. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's awful. It's going to ruin the industry. Listen, I'm not against big companies owning car dealerships. That's fine. But I've found the most effective dealers, especially in, again, these smaller mid-sized markets, is local ownership, local control. And it's a little depraved to have the government be the one that kind of tips a family's decision one way or the other. Tax policies should be about rewarding success, not about punishing it. Especially when you talk about real estate sales, capital gains, we have to understand that capital gains taxes need to be lower, not higher, to encourage investment and not punish success. And that's a big issue. The problem is on the left, they look at people who made money and succeeded as they must have done something wrong and cheated. Listen, I know when I bought my first dealership, I put every cent I had into that place. And if I had gone broke, I wouldn't have had 1 cent left in my name. And I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs. Now, the car business is good today. We all know that. Everybody I'm talking to is enjoying great success, which is fantastic. But there are times when business is tough. 2008, 2007, I saw a lot of my fellow dealers go out of business. And so to reward the risk taking is something that's always been the hallmark of tax policy. We can't reverse that.
Sure. You talked about the dealers doing great right now, and they are in large part because of a chip shortage. Because you were able to hold on to our profits and gross profits of both new and used, because used in such big demand right now. Is there anything that you see at a federal level that could be done to make sure we never fall into this chip situation again? As one dealer called it, we're now into the chip-demic. But is there anything that you think could be done from your perspective? I know that Biden had, I think, proposed a $50 billion expense to say, let's bring this to our country so that we're not dependent on other countries if this ever happens again. Is that an idea that's worthwhile, or?
Absolutely. In fact, that is my number one signature issue. We have to be chip independent. Think of it like energy, right? We talk about energy independence, and that's very important. But we need to be chip independent by the end of this decade. We need to repatriate all semiconductor chip manufacturing to America. So whatever we consume for semiconductor chips, we have it here in the United States. And I think, by the way, Ohio could be a leader in making those. Taiwan produces virtually 100% of semiconductor chips today. And in China, I don't know if you know this, Jim, if you and I go to China and we say the word Taiwan, we could go to jail.
Really?
We consider Taiwan to be part of what they call One China. And it's only a matter of time. It's the largest ticking time bomb on Earth, where China will exert extreme control over Taiwan. And now think about being completely dependent on China for batteries, pharmaceuticals, PPE, and semiconductor chips. At that point, there's no negotiating with China. They own us. So we have to have a World War II type mobilization, a moonshot type of thing from the 60s to bring semiconductor chip manufacturing back to the US. And we can do it. By the way, these are our designs. We own the intellectual property of how to make these.
We spend over there.
And yet we make them over there. It's insane. We have to change course on that immediately.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned healthcare, so I'll go there for just a second. Talk to us about Obamacare. Should the U.S. be in the healthcare business and guarantee and provide healthcare to all of its citizens?
Well, ask the people of Cuba how that works out when the government takes over healthcare. It's not, nobody goes to Cuba for medical procedures. The worst medical system on earth, Canada, which has nationalized healthcare. You know, that you ask, we're here in Cleveland. I can't tell you how many Canadians come here for healthcare. We need to have the private sector do it. Now, with that said, we need to make healthcare more affordable. I was on the board of directors of the local community hospital here. It's no exaggeration to say 50% of the cost of healthcare is waste. There's so much bureaucracy, so much friction in the system. We can fix that. And certainly having the government take it over would be the exact opposite of fixing it. Look at Federal Express versus the post office, right? So it's about taking the cost out of healthcare, taking the regulation, the bureaucracy out of healthcare. You know, prior to the pandemic, I couldn't see my doctor on Zoom if I had just a quick question, because that wasn't a licensed thing, and I certainly couldn't do it across state lines. All those regulations need to be looked at and removed to make just the process much more streamlined.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we hear the term bipartisan in D.C. thrown around constantly, even more now with the Biden administration. He talks about it all the time. But at the end of the day, we do live in a very divisive country, and currently the Democrats hold the House, the Senate, and the executive branch with the Oval Office. What can be done if you win from the state of Ohio? However, if in the event that, you know, you still don't have as a party the Senate or the House, can things still get done?
Well, I think two things. Number one, we have to understand that the Republicans have always been the party of compromise. The Democrats have not compromised on anything. So we keep compromising. Have you ever been in a negotiation where you keep giving and the other side doesn't? So first, we have to realize we have to be smart about negotiating. Secondly, the good news for us is that with a divided Senate specifically, is that if you can get four or five or six really smart senators to form a coalition, you can really sway policy one way or the other. Right now, the most important politician in America is not Joe Biden, it's Joe Manchin. And Joe Manchin holds all the cards. He represents one of the smallest states in the country, okay. But he's the one blocking a lot of the extreme legislation that the Democrats want to pass. So my point is, you've got guys like Steve Daines, Rick Scott, hopefully myself in there, that if we formed a coalition of business people know how to get things done, we could really get some substantive things through DC. So I'm very optimistic. That's why I do it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't think I could make a difference there.
Yeah, no question about it. Should the U.S. have pulled out of Afghanistan the way that it did? And should we have a contingency there? Or what's your take on the Afghan situation?
We were there too long. 20 years is just a long time to be engaged in a country. We never had a clear mission. You know, I think one of the things that we can't do is have these endless wars. I can't look in the eyes of an 18-year-old from Ohio and say you're going to go there and risk your life and not have a clear reason why they're going to go there. We can't be in the country building business. It just doesn't work. I think that neocon view of the world had an idea behind it. But at the end of the day, you know, I have kids that age, and I wouldn't want to send my child to a place where they could die with no clear mission in mind.
So, Bernie, tell us about the letter that Roger Penske signed on your behalf to get other dealers, and I think some other dealers were involved as well, to say, hey, we need Bernie Moreno in the Senate.
Yeah, I was very honored to have the support of what I consider the most prominent car dealers in the United States. We're signing on more every single day. People like Joe Agresti, Mario Morgado, obviously you mentioned Roger Penske Jr., and Michael Cantanucci, and lots of others here locally, Bob Serpentini, the Weiler family in Cincinnati. We'd love to have more auto dealers support the campaign. So if you're interested in joining that, please let us know. My personal email is bernie@berniemoreno.com. I would love to hear from you. Love to hear what your issues are. Because again, we need more entrepreneurs down in DC.
Sure. And one last question. I appreciate all the time you've given us here today. Why do you want to be the senator from Ohio?
Because I'm just sick of the same old politicians, Jim. They tell us what we want to hear when we want to hear it. I like to say politicians are there when they need you. They're never there when we need them. And I looked at the field and said, you know, honestly, I wouldn't hire him to be my sales manager, let alone general manager of any of my dealerships. And so how do I hire them to lead our country? And I know it's hard, but listen, honestly, Jim, one of the things I really want to do with this race is inspire fellow car dealers. We are the gritty entrepreneurs that know how to get things done to join me down in D.C. You know, guys like Joe Gresty, who know how to get things done. If I can motivate two or three of them and we end up going to D.C. together, we can do some really, really great things. And I hope that I do this. I hope to get in D.C. and I hope others watching this broadcast who are smart people come down to D.C. because we have to fix our country.
Well, as you heard, folks, and I should say more specifically, dealers that are listening, we have an opportunity in this industry to finally have that voice in the Senate, somebody that has run automobile dealerships very successfully, people just like yourselves listening to this discussion today. We need that in the auto industry. We'll show the information here if you'd like to make a donation to Bernie Moreno's campaign. He's one of the good guys out there, and he's fighting the good fight every day. So Bernie Moreno, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you in your campaign and much continued success.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it very, very much.
Thanks.
Thanks for watching CBT News, the voice of the retail automotive industry. Fitzpatrick, Pash, Kane, Lewis, Greenfield, Reed, Dawson, Lopes, Rice. The best lineup in retail automotive. CBTNews.com. Subscribe today.